Just another con man sitting on a hill. You see him at the bullfight, closest to the kill. Up in the towers, the dreams to the core. No matter how he gets on, he always wants more. He said he was a rock.
And welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, and of course I am with my two con men, actually con man and con woman. Con people, what is the politically correct con persons?
I think it's
confidence,
called a...
Confidence people?
Confidence people.
Well,
confidence
to use people. Kind of maybe the Latin plural, I think it's called a scam of con men.
A scam.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's not like a gaggle or a herd or a...
Well, they have a murder of crows. It's a scam of con men,
A parliament of con men? Oh, wait. Is that too soon?
Ladies and gentlemen, Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody.
And Jeff McNair.
I'm only here because I need to save money for my grandmother's operation.
You already got $20
your
out of me.
Your grandmother also needs an operation?
Yeah, my German grandmother. Yeah, or Swedish. I don't know which one.
Or Italian.
My Italian grandmother.
Or British, or I don't know.
And if that didn't give you a hint, we are talking about Bedtime Story, 1964 Marlon Brando film, along with David Niven.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is a pretty cool film. And
Shirley Jones.
And the one that most of you probably know about, it's on Netflix right now, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Mm-hmm. That's Mr. Steve Martin and Michael Caine.
That's right.
Yeah. And Glenn Headley.
You know, I didn't know Bedtime Story. For a long time, I knew Dirty Rotten Scoundrels was a remake. I just didn't know of what.
Yes.
And they definitely came up with a better title in the 80s.
Oh, for sure.
Bedtime Story. It doesn't make sense. No, it doesn't.
It doesn't fit in with the movie at all.
Other than that really cool stop-motion pop-up book intro that they have, rolling the credits. It's really is.
Because we're in 1964. You watch any 60s
I think they're trying to do some Big Bad Wolf parable or something, but I just didn't get it.
Well, they did start off at the beginning talking about, like, there was this one guy who, there was a prince who lived in a castle. Well, it wasn't a castle. It was just a big house by the sea. There's like, then there was a wolf. He lived in Germany preying on weak young women. So I think they were trying to make it a story.
It doesn't work.
No. It falls apart.
Maybe the bedtime
quickly.
Part is because, like...
Because he tries to bed
there's
people?
There's kind of an end game to each scam.
Well, for Marlon Brando, not so much for David Niven, I don't think.
No, but he's working his angles.
He's working his angles, but I don't know. He's more gentlemanly about it.
Yeah, well, and he's got his little territory, and he kind of sticks to it, and they're the lion and the jackal.
Oh, for sure.
And from the theme of both is they're essentially they don't want to compete on the same space. They, you know, there's only room for one man, and this is his territory. And
yes.
So they spark up a competition, and good to go.
I know. Well, it was like they kind of likened it to hunting, where David Niven was like, this is my hunting grounds. This is where I am. And he's like, but he's a poacher, and poachers scare away the big game.
Now, I'm guessing...
The poacher parable was actually in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. He says it differently in the original.
No, he does say that the poachers will scare away rabbits. Yeah.
He said something about... Like,
he still does the rabbits line.
Yeah, he still does the same thing. Like, that's the thing. These are very closely modeled on each other. Very closely.
I don't think I wrote down the exact line, but both in both films, when after trying to unsuccessfully scare Freddy away... which is, I guess, depending on which movie you're watching, Marlon Brando and Steve Martin.
Yeah.
And he comes back and he says, no longer satisfied with rabbits.
With rabbits, yeah.
Yeah, he's no longer satisfied with rabbits. So, you know, he's playing for bigger game. Mm-hmm. So...
But, I mean, when they both get off the train in
there's
both movies, he is talking to the police guy and saying, well, no, I don't like poachers because they'll scare away all the big game.
Yeah.
They both say it.
Yeah, there's a lot of lines in common, and that is because of the two writers from the original film, Stanley Shapiro and Paul Henning, were instrumental in the credits for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I mean, I think even if they didn't write anything for the script, they still would have got major credits because it's almost the same script. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels had one other person on the writing credits, which was Dale Lawner, who was... at the time running pretty hot from My Cousin Vinny, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and his job was just to kind of modernize it a little bit. Like, the the 60s one really is a product of its time.
Oh, for sure.
Like a lot.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. That was directed by Ralph Levy, who had done a lot of 60s television.
Tons of TV.
Tons of it, and all of it's pretty famous television.
Same with Shapiro, too, was a TV guy. I looked at his filmography there. And yeah, they're both big TV guys, and I think it's actually the only feature that Shapiro wrote, if you don't count using the same script for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
I don't even recall Levy having any other features on his credits.
No, he didn't at all. Yeah, he was just straight television well into the 70s, though.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels was directed by Frank Oz. That's right. Yes. Yoda and Miss Piggy.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Very famous for his voice work, not so famous for his directing work, but he's done some decent directing. This was actually his first fully live-action movie that wasn't a Muppet something or other. Little Shop of Horrors was prior to this and still had live-action actors, but of course puppets in there as well. So this is the first one. No puppets, all people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, people puppeteering other people.
But... You know, his
that's right. It's all about puppets.
Yeah, his relationship with Steve Martin started on the Muppet movie. So
yeah, but I find him a very capable comedy director.
Frank Oz is he's got a lot of talent quite good
in that movie though. Like for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, like it wouldn't take much to be a good movie with Michael Caine.
Well, I'd say the same in Levy's version as well. Marlon Brando and David Niven.
They're both excellent.
Yeah.
I read it.
And, of course, backed up with Shirley Jones.
But yeah.
It might be, a little less known for people, but...
They're good, but it's...
a great three...
It's odd to see Marlon Brando doing comedy to me.
It was, honestly, and this was the earliest role I've seen him so far. Like, I don't know if I've actually seen a movie with thin Brando, handsome and kind of... Young.
Well, he's stocky Brando.
Honestly, I haven't really watched any of those classics. Not a lot of those classics.
I could have been
anyway.
A contender.
You know, I think the earliest thing I've seen was Godfather. So.
Oh, really? Wow.
He's already pudgy by then.
Yeah.
So.
I'm more familiar with round Brando.
Yeah,
sexy Brando in Streetcar. It was actually like because he's the dirty, like, whatever, the guy that
Stanley
yells.
Stanley Kowalski.
Right? Yeah, Stanley Kowalski. And I expected the characters to kind of be the same. Like, going into... Maybe I've never seen Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, but didn't clue in that it was like a comedy. So when we were watching this, or when I was watching Bedtime Stories, I expected it to be more like Streetcar, where there would be, like, moments of levity, but it would be more of a serious, like, drama, especially with that cast. But David Niven is really...
David Niven
like,
is
a good
great.
Straight man. Yeah.
Yeah, and when I was reading up on this a bit, I guess Brando had a hell of a tough time getting through the shoot because David Niven had him in stitches the whole time. Like, he just could not stop laughing.
And oh,
there
David
are times
is
where
brilliant.
He's trying not to look directly at Niven because he just starts cracking up.
You notice
again.
That, actually. There's
you
a
do.
Lot, especially when they're doing the wheelchair bit. He's always looking at the ground.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
every scene. He won't
why.
Look at him. Yeah.
A bunch of the wheelchair bit is actually filmed over Brando's shoulder. Like, if you remember that bit.
Yeah. So
most of it is filmed over his shoulder. They only have a few shots where they show his face.
I wonder when Brando became the like prima donna Brando. Did he still memorize lines back then? He was still young and thirsty.
When I saw this, I'm like, imagine an alternate timeline where Brando was like, I kind of like doing comedies. I want to try more of these. Like, what alternate timeline would that be like?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've seen him do comedies before. Even old Brando did a couple, so.
Well, I don't know if it's unintentional comedy with old Brando, but... He was really good. I thought going into Dirty Rotten Scoundrels that thinking about Steve Martin in that role, I was like, man, I can't wait until the idiot brother sequence because Martin's going to kill it. And it was terrible. It was hard to watch and awful. Brando is incredible. Martin just
I thought Martin did a little bit better when he was doing the wheelchair bit.
Yes.
I thought Martin did that better because Brando trying to get out of the chair and staggering looks really forced. And there is something about the 60s stuff because they still act like they're on a stage.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of stiffness in the dialogue. But I never really minded that with classic film at all. It's just something you learn to appreciate along the way. That had a lot to do with them being stage actors, and they didn't have a lot of, I think boom mics were just starting to come in and that sort of thing. Before, they used to have to stand by plants and stuff where all the microphones were hidden.
Yeah, the way things are filmed, sort of, you have to stage it a certain way.
Yeah, so, you know, this was still early in film techniques and whatnot.
Yeah,
so.
I don't know, and just in the wheelchair, like, I think Steve Martin has the wheelchair bit down where he's got the legs in the right position where he looks like he should be paralyzed, whereas Brando is kind of more splayed, like he's relaxing in the wheelchair. Yeah. It just doesn't look right. I think that's that bit, that note is off. But I'm kind of with you on, like, I liked it. I like Brando's, like, Ruprecht better.
Oh, wait.
Because it was crazy. Mm. But what I think about it, I think the reason is the Steve Martin one, when you first see him, they show him in his, like, little place with, like, a tiny little play bit and, like, a tire swing. And then the way he walks. And I'm like, I think he just was supposed to be an orangutan. And that doesn't really make what Ruprecht is supposed to be. Ruprecht is supposed to be sort of a mental case, but not an orangutan.
I think, Steve Martin overplays it and, plays it more like a monkey. But
I think the tire swing shouldn't have been there, because that really what made me think that.
He does play the wheelchair stuff better, though. I think those scenes play better in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And the Ruprecht stuff works better in Bedtime Stories.
There has to be more characters called Ruprecht. I just really love that.
I really like Brando's Neanderthal-y, you know, hide in the basement character. And whenever Steve Martin talked as that character, it was kind of like this really, like, effeminate British.
Well, it was sort of something like this.
Yeah. Well, he was supposed to be the brother and the idiot brother, but. At the same time, his brother's British, so he's got to try to put that into
the there affectation
as well.
Wasn't right.
And he's trying to muddle a lot in there. And it is what it is. And I think, they both, depending on what parts they were playing,
some of the physicality was decent in, like, Steve Martin's one. Like, I liked the bit with, like, the fork with the cork on it.
Yeah, that was great.
Eating his applesauce.
I like when he's being trained to, like, lean on the column like a gentleman.
Yes.
He slides down, and it actually kind of looks in that scene like he hurt his hand. He kind of like looks at it for a second. I guess
so. Well, there's some like the
training montage is great.
The training montage is great in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah, well, we're getting a little ahead. I want to talk a little bit about the directorial choices, watching these back to back, and essentially they are the same movie with a different ending. But just in that opening sequence where they're introducing Lawrence in both films, in that scene where he's being classy and fleecing that first lady for her jewels.
Yes. The hands and the jewels.
And the hands. And the first scene, you see her putting it on the table or whatever with the jewels and the voiceover. And then you finally see the camera on Niven and you see them full on. In the Oz version, it really is just the hands. You never get above the shoulders. You never see their faces. And it's neat, really nicely stylized shot. And it sets the tone. I'm like, oh, we're going to get something at least visually more interesting in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah, that scene was definitely
it sets
more
a tone.
Interesting. Because in the original, it's a static shot.
Yeah.
And the pillow, and then it goes on for maybe a little too long, whatever. But yeah,
because
it was more interesting to kind of follow, like, the camera followed the hands as a focal point, so you're left and right and up, and that was a little better.
And, like, but there's, like, those little flips of the hand, like, no, he's kind of holding his hand against her, no, I cannot accept. Mm-hmm. So there's, like, a lot of acting done just with the hands, like, you can see it play out.
Probably had a hand model.
A bunch of hand models.
Probably.
They don't get enough work. Yeah. but in the previous one, it goes on too long, and then they add, for some reason, that little tidbit where he's like going, oh, but you're gorgeous, but for some reason, when you take the jewels off, you're more beautiful. They sort of take away from your beauty, and I'm like, that's just kind of dumb. Mm-hmm. I like the way the other one was.
Pretty funny.
I didn't like that bit.
Especially because that last brooch totally was holding that dress together. So
I kept thinking the dress, they'd show, hold on, that because the scene goes on for so long. I thought that scene would just go on just a touch more so you could see her
slide down
off
a little bit. That's probably too risque for Singapore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It totally would have. Just a little off the shoulder. But, I mean, even just the connotation of that, I'm like, oh, they never even allude to that in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. So.
Well, because you don't get any of that. I found...
They kind of do later on Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
The intro in Bedtime Stories was more interesting for me because you get, like, storybook thing aside, you get to see a little bit of Lawrence, and a little bit of Freddy, kind of doing their thing and how their acts are different. You know, he's playing the wealthy angle, other guys the poor soldier angle, and
just
then
trying to get fed and get laid.
Yeah, and it eventually gets to a point where, you know, they meet on the train, and then their relationship starts with yet another.
They skip all past.
They skip all of that. It's like
you only get that little bit with Lawrence, but you don't see.
You don't see Freddy and Dirty Rotten.
You actually see that train sequence happen in a different order. It's that's where we're introduced to Freddy, is when he's getting his meal, instead of being introduced to Lawrence in the boxcar. That happens afterwards, and Lawrence witnesses ahead of time. And it serves the same purpose, and it moves everything along, because, boy, it takes him a while to get together
about a half an hour.
And it's a shorter movie.
I like that whole lead-up, though. Like, I found that interesting, and I like the bit where Lawrence plays dumb and watches him do his con in the dining car. And I thought the dining car con was better with Brando than in the new one. Like, I just felt like the new one shortened everything up, but was a longer movie, if that makes sense.
It's the newer one is a longer movie, and they do shorten things up to get that little extra sequence at the end.
I think.
Before we get too far ahead of ourselves, I'm going to run the trailer for Bedtime Story. I could not find an original trailer, which would have been cool. So this is actually from the video release around the time of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and you'll hear it say the movie that inspired Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. It's not inspired. It is the same. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is pretty much the same movie. Down to some of the dialogue. So I'm going to run that. Then there are some musical bits, so, you know, be patient with it. And a little later on, we'll run Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
First time on video, the hilarious 1964 classic that inspired Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Bedtime Story.
I'm afraid I'm a bit naive when it comes to the weaker sex.
The weaker sex? Remember this, it takes six men to carry a guy that will rape. It takes one woman to put him there.
You're on. You seem very interested in that young lady who just checked in. Should we make her the test case?
Their honor as con men and lovers was at stake. And since everything's fair in love or war, they stop at nothing to see who'll wind up king of the mountain.
There's one thing Freddie Benson's never confused about, and that's sex. That girl's mine anytime I want her.
They attack and counterattack. The result? Another hilarious romantic comedy in the scintillating style of Pillow Talk, Lover Come Back, Operation Petticoat, and That Touch of Mink. But faster, funnier, wilder than anything you've ever seen before.
Now you must sit down and rest.
No, now that I'm on my feet, I want to see how far I can go.
This is Jason Mewes, and you're listening to Invasion of the Remake, Snoochie Boochies.
All right, so that was the trailer for Bedtime Story 1964. And, you know, I find this movie interesting because for 1964, it's actually more of a sexual movie than Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is.
For sure. Well, and that's the characterizations of Freddy being different in both movies. Like, it's not really the same character.
No, Steve Martin definitely plays that character differently. I mean, they kind of end up in the same place with Janet. And
now, why did they change? Everything's so similar. Why did they change Janet's last name?
I'll tell you why. Because
you want to make her seem like an
Freddy. Freddy is no longer the Jackal. She is. She's the Jackal.
But her name
spoiler.
Her name was Janet in the original.
And it's still Janet in the new one, or in the 88. And it's Janet Colgate. J-A-C-O-L. That makes Jackal.
I guess.
That was what they were trying to do. It's stupid, but
that's... See, I thought they were trying to go for, like, Colgate.
You know,
like,
making my
Colgate
notes,
fortune.
And I'm like going, oh, that's why they did it. That's dumb.
I thought it was funny. I have a friend named Janet Walker, and it just amused me throughout. The lady who plays Janet in the new movie, or the new movie. The 25-year-old new movie.
It's actually
the newer movie.
When they remade it as Dirty Rotten Scoundrels 24 years after, it's now 27 years after Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Due, we're due for
I know, yeah. I feel like we're due.
There was a musical.
Although
I noticed that, actually.
There is a musical that was about 10 years ago. I think that started up. And thematically, there's been a female version of this where it's been flipped to female con artists and a guy. It's a very different movie, different script, but it's essentially the same type of movie. It's called Heartbreakers.
Oh, yes.
And I do believe that was Sigourney Weaver and Jennifer Love Hewitt. And I really enjoyed that movie, so go check that one out as
With,
well.
Oh, God, what's his face from Goodfellas?
Yeah, it's a very similar concept.
Yeah, and Gene Hackman was in it.
Yeah, Gene Hackman's in that as well.
How do you say the actor? Is it Glenn?
Glenn Headley.
I was
going
to ask you. I think it's Glenn.
It's Glenn.
Glenn Headley.
Glenn Headley.
Glenn Headley.
And that was her big feature debut, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was. I love her in Dick Tracy.
Oh, I totally forgot she was in that.
What's her character's last name? Is Tracy Trueheart or something like that? But she's like Dick Tracy's like girlfriend.
Yeah.
And she takes on the kid and stuff. And she's actually is basically the same character up until the spoiler alert twist ending in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. They're so similar. She plays just like that naive.
That sweet.
Sweet. And her face and everything. And yeah, she's adorable in Dick Tracy. So yeah, I liked her immediately in this movie.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, remember Dick Tracy? No one else will make that connection. Who the fuck is Dick Tracy?
I totally forgot about Dick Tracy.
Yeah, Warren Beatty, no big deal.
Well, no, I mean, I've seen
well,
it.
Well, Dick Tracy.
But I've only seen it like once or twice.
The movie itself
right around the time when it came out. So it's kind of foggy in my head. Kind of like going into Dirty Rotten Scoundrels before watching it, things were kind of snapping back. But
yeah,
I'd seen Dirty Rotten Scoundrels a few more times than Dick Tracy. So
oh, a ton more times.
But Dick Tracy, and mainly I think I'm just trying to avoid Madonna. But because, I mean, there's a lot.
To look at her
there's
face.
Some cool shit in Dick Tracy.
There is, yeah.
But this is not a Dick Tracy podcast. Yet.
It's coming.
I don't know how to...
Wait. Nobody told me about this new direction.
My problem with wanting to talk about Dick Tracy is I wouldn't remake it, so...
Yeah.
It's
been done a lot.
It's pretty awesome.
It's been done a lot.
Yeah.
But I love her in that. She's great. I liked her more than the Janet character in the 64.
Yeah, I did too. But Janet was kind of flat in the 64.
Well,
she
the 64,
didn't have that extra
she didn't
dimension.
Really
well,
have much purpose.
Flat.
Like, in the 64, she wasn't
was
anything.
She was playing with... she was in the con. Like, she was fully being conned.
She was being conned.
Oh, yeah, both movies
she was
are
a victim from beginning
women,
to end.
Like, the whole thing.
Oh, sure. I mean,
in the 60s, they're super gullible.
In the 60s, they're stupid, and
yeah,
they don't
I mean,
know any better.
Fanny from
and they'll believe
Oklahoma.
Anything.
Fanny from Oklahoma.
Fanny from Oklahoma is like, oh, when you get back to America, you'll come back and marry me. Oh,
yeah.
Come on. He's
at least with Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, you know, she winds up, you know, playing them, so at least it flips everything on its head and like, oh, she's actually a very strong character, female
oh,
character.
Completely.
So, you know, that was kind of nice and still plays better on today's stage than I think Bedtime Story does.
Well, even within it all, that character in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, there's more to her than
sure.
in this 1964.
Definitely. All the female characters are throwaway.
Yeah.
In the
You know,
except
Miss Fanny from Oklahoma.
Fanny's the only one that has any kind of character. Everybody else is just like
they're pretty flat.
You know, bejeweled, big hair,
just
family.
Long enough to get
get jewels by Cartier.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I did notice that as well. I was like, well, good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. So that whole vehicle was just to sell jewelry, probably.
I think so.
Especially when what was it? He's like, oh, the Duchess's emerald paid for the garden or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know, early in the film, Lawrence is posing as this prince, and that's how he's getting these really big scams. It's a very elaborate story.
Oh, for sure.
Like he's been ousted from his home country because in the original film, because of the threat of communism.
Well, this is what I think is the constant. I find that's nice that there's in both films.
Actually, they're both communism.
They're
both.
Because it was cold. I mean, it was at the start of the Cold War and the end of the Cold War.
But the thing about in both films, basically a lot of his cons rely on these rich, wealthy basically American people who don't know any heiresses who know nothing about global politics and don't know any of the countries in the world.
That would be Paris Hilton today.
Yeah, like you could make he just made up a country and they're like, oh, you're a prince from that country? That country doesn't exist. Like they just don't know anything. So it's a good con. Like he knows his prey. They're rich and stupid.
Oh, he does his research, right? Like he is, he poses this prince and has locals under his thumb to kind of help sell his story. The police constable,
the police constable is his best buddy.
Now, I might have like missed it in the original movie, but I feel like we don't learn that the guy feeding him information is a police chief until they're tailing Marlon Brando to break up that second scam. Does he say it? Because in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, he's I'm the police chief.
Until he comes up and says, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels pretty much just says
right away.
It was later in the original. I think it was. Because I didn't know he was the police chief until he sticks Freddy in jail when he comes back.
Which I kind of like that subtlety. Yeah. I think that reveal should have been held as well.
We see him earlier when he's help selling the story to Fanny. You know,
you don't know who he is. Yeah. You just know he's in on
the con. They're at the roulette wheel and he wants to sell off something and
the royal ring.
Yeah.
Your Highness.
Oh, no. So he walks off. We don't want the whole world to know.
Being a prince is a panty dropper in 1964, guys. Just
apparently in 1988, too.
Yeah, 88 as well.
Yeah, well, apparently.
So he walks off, and he chases, are you an actual prince? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to pry, whatever. Totally selling it, and have this brief conversation, and he disappears in the bushes.
Yeah, jumps over the thing.
Oh, David Niven just leaping over that thing and just, like, casually strolling away.
Dude.
I totally would.
Very dapper.
David
there you
Niven.
Go.
Yeah, he was super dapper. He did it better than Michael Caine. Michael Caine kind of fell into
the
palm.
He was elegant.
Yeah.
Michael Caine has the better voice for it, but yeah, I'd say Niven was definitely more suave.
I liked when Michael Caine, because it's behind the head for that first little bit, and he turns around and he's got the exact same like mustache as Niven. I just thought that moment was
Good. Yeah, the porn stash. Yeah, so the French cop, I love in the first one where he just takes the grift, takes your chips. She's trying to offer no, and then when he starts talking, he just yanks it right out of her hands.
Yes.
Because she offers more. She's like, oh.
But that doesn't happen to Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. He never takes it.
He's like, no, he's actually, nuts.
Yeah, so, which I thought was an interesting choice.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, they did something funny and stupid.
He is the most bloodthirsty cop. He can't wait to kill Freddy.
Oh, yeah. Well, he knows the same guy in both movies. He's an absolute surgeon with a knife, and I swear to God, I will investigate it in a very slipshod manner.
I love in the 64 where he pulls out the Luger from Hermann Göring. Yeah. Göring's Luger.
It's only got Göring's fingerprints on it. They'll never find out.
I thought was great. And it's a joke you can only play closer to World War II. It wouldn't have played in 88. So.
Yeah. Run the prince. What are they going to do?
Yeah. I thought that Göring was really funny. And I mean, I guess they could have picked a presidential assassination of some sort, but I don't think it would have played in, especially in the French Riviera.
Who was the guy who tried to shoot, Reagan.
Yeah, well, and that's you couldn't have done it anyway because you were on foreign soil during that. So trying to get a French police officer to get the gun from an American case, and let's face it, Americans are very sensitive about that sort of thing. And I get it. So they want to keep not.
From what we know, they really love keeping their guns at home.
Nazis are funny. Presidential assassins, not so funny.
Yeah. Oh, no, they did something stupid with that I noticed in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. That it was dumb, but I liked it. Where, like, Fanny comes out and, like, he pushes her into, like, the one bush. It's like, you are in very much danger. And then they keep pushing her in the bushes.
Yeah. I noticed that, too. Why does he keep pushing her in the bushes?
It was stupid, but I laughed. I swear I laughed.
Those skinny little leaves are definitely going to hide your conversation.
There's just a lot more physical comedy in the second one.
For sure.
Like, a lot more. Especially, that bit there. And
well, that's something that I expected because, that's more Steve Martin's thing, right? Mm.
Yes. Well, I think that's why you have the whole montage, too. Like, because, like you say, it does really illustrate a lot of his physicality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tons in that, for sure. I don't even remember a training montage. It wasn't really a training montage.
Well, it shows him about champagne.
No, not in the original, sorry.
Oh, no, not in the original.
No.
Yeah, there wasn't really any. It was like, okay, you can work for me, and now you're the retarded brother. And then they go, okay, well, this is stupid. I can do this better than you. And they try to find the new mark.
Oh, there was a couple little sequences, but I wouldn't even classify it as a montage.
Yeah,
in fact, there was one where, in the second one, where I thought they were going to break into a montage, and it was like one sequence and then break to the bar. So it didn't work. It didn't actually happen.
Yeah, I think the closest they have to a montage in the original one was where he shows him all the things that he spent his money on.
Yeah,
where he's like going, yes, this man, he's going to take him a while to do this cup. He's like,
the culture thing.
Yeah, well, he should go out of business. And he's like, no. But then his art is lost forever. Then they go to the ballet studio. They go to a few different places.
Oh, he kept going on and on about the taxes.
Oh, I actually like the tax angle in the first one, where he's like talking about, well, you can't get your money because there's a whole taxation thing. You have to give back to society. And he said this one thing, and I wrote it down. Where is it?
It made more sense because Kane doesn't even do that. He's like, no, you're training. The trainees don't get money.
Well, David Niven had something like that. Money should be like an arrow. If it has no target, it has no purpose.
Yeah, that was a good line.
Which I really liked.
And then all it was in the new one was like, you're done with money. You don't know how to spend it. And then
you don't get it.
His like reason, I thought that the art and culture angle with David Niven in the original was way better than the other one, where it's like, I purchased wine and I moved this statue, and it's like, well, you're not really doing anything with it.
No.
You're like hoarding wine.
You're hoarding art.
Like, David Niven was assisting people get stuff done. Yeah, like, he was actually putting it back into that community.
Yeah, and he was involved in the community of the place that I can't say, so I'm going to make you say it.
Beaumont-sur-le-Mer?
Yeah, that one.
Beaumont on the sea.
She always does the French, like, at least convincing.
Convincingly, yeah.
I don't know if she speaks it, but
it's probably atrocious, but
it sells.
Je ne parle pas français.
You conned me into thinking you could speak.
I conned me. Yes,
we con everybody into listening every week. So
that's right.
We do.
Tell your friends.
Yep. Invasion of the Remake is the new panty dropper of the 2000s. Maybe, I don't know.
Wait, it hasn't worked
on
for
my
me
end.
Yet.
Can we?
It doesn't work on my wife.
Can we have a boxer dropper for me?
Dropper. We'll find one. That would the show useful, was guys. Commando. You guys got to start telling me stuff.
Uh-oh. We've been sitting on the same couch for a long while now. I don't know how I feel about it.
There's a fire at Jason's place. What happened? Who knows? Well, now I lost what I was going to say.
That's something about terrifying me.
Okay, so Marlon Brando. Initially, I actually didn't like his character. Found him really kind of creepy and lecherous.
He
comes like just up in his delivery, his facial expression. Yeah. I was like, no woman would buy this. He's way too obvious.
Yeah.
But then he kind of, and maybe that's the point, he kind of grows into it. And I ended up liking his characterization more than I liked Steve Martin as a whole.
Well, he's supposed to come off rough and lecherous. And, you know, the military background helps sell that a little bit. And he just found a line that works and just kept using it. Oh, this looks like my mama's house.
My grandmother's house. I told her I'd visit there one day. She's very ill.
There. That was great. Rubs it in.
That's brilliant, yeah.
That whole sequence just should have been in it again. I don't know. I think Dirty Rotten Scoundrels really lost something by not giving
I think
us
they
that
were trying story. To definitely make it, even that's though it's 64, I think they were trying to make it a more all-ages friendly film and take the sexual connotations out of that as much as they could.
Oh my god.
For make
that
it more
whole
of a
movie
family
is an hour
film.
And a half of innuendos. What are you talking about?
No, the bedtime story.
That's what I'm
sure.
talking about.
No, I'm talking Dirty Rotten Scoundrel.
Yeah,
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels
is cleaner.
Really, it doesn't even get there until they decide
the very end, sort
near
of.
The end, when they thought they were victimizing somebody who was poor.
Yeah.
So they changed it to whoever got laid first.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, in the same movie, in both
bet.
Movies, it's the
they
same
both,
thing.
They both
changed the bet. But in what's great is they actually kept both. I was curious
what
would
so
happen in Bedtime Story.
But there's so much sexual stuff in Bedtime Story prior to. There is nothing in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
True. Yeah,
prior
it kind of comes out of nowhere, I guess. It's like it's very clearly through
there's
lots
a couple
of visual
little,
metaphor.
Yeah, there's a couple of flirty
game, right?
little things that Steve Martin does, but they don't give him those scenes. You know, he'll see a hot chick go by and he'll eye her, but that's it.
Yeah, like they don't give him that scoundrel angle where he's not only just scamming these women.
He doesn't come off near as lecherous.
But yeah, he's not just scamming these women. He's also sleeping with them at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not just taking their money and their virginity.
Yeah, I'm promising to marry them. Like you've that was what bothered me. Like in Bedtime Story, when Marlon Brando's getting on the train, there's literally a gaggle of women just chasing after him, and this one woman's like, "You're going to marry me?" I'm like, "Dude, chick, look around you."
I mean, Lawrence
the
certainly
odds are
had
not good.
Plenty girls on the hook as well as potential fiancés, and that plays out during the whole the montage with Ruprecht.
Yeah, he finds a way to get out of it, but also, and I think that scene with Brando being chased by all the women, it's supposed to show how his con isn't as matured as Lawrence's is, right? Because Lawrence is on the train because he's conned his quota in the town, and he's moving to a new town because it's like, okay, no, you can't do it anymore. And I think that's what it was speaking to with Brando. It's like he's conning woman after woman after woman, and it gets to the point where it's like the whole town is like after him. And not after him because he conned them, because they are still
even his.
Whereas David Niven can keep his house in his same place.
Even
for
his
all
commanding
time.
Officer's daughter.
Yeah. That's a part I'm sad was gone too, where
that was a good scene.
Blackmails the commander and.
Yeah,
well, they kind of took out the military angle in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Yeah, he pretends to be a military guy.
Yeah, that still plays, but in the original, Brando is still military while conning these women, and a complaint arises, which brings him into the office of his commanding officer, his colonel, and he keeps switching the dialogue, and technically it's all your fault. This is going to reflect badly on you.
Yeah, because I've been doing all these terrible things and you didn't know about it, so now you look like a fool.
Yeah, so suddenly he's already starting to kind of blackmail him.
Yeah.
And manages to get a discharge.
Discharge.
I kept waiting for, like, honorable discharge to really see if he bucked it up a little bit.
Yes.
Let's bargain this up a little bit. It's not, it would have been a dishonorable discharge prior. He was going to get discharged anyway with his actions, and probably thrown in a military jail.
Burgermeister's daughter. That seems freaking hilarious.
That was quite funny.
Only the second film I have actually ever heard the term Burgermeister, and the first one was, I think, maybe it's a third then, because the one that came to mind was one of those Rudolph Holiday specials.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Burgermeister. Well, yeah, I had to look it up, and I looked it up just before we started the podcast. I'm like, basically, it's the German equivalent of a mayor.
Yeah, 100%.
Did not know that. But that's weird that, like, the military guys can't go after the mayor's daughter.
It is not some cool kid slang for a guy who eats a lot of hamburgers.
Burgermeister.
No. Hey, Burgermeister! Burgermeister!
It's like a 1960s Jughead. Wait, Jughead was around the 1960s.
Yeah.
I like the bit where
he takes off his clothes.
Because he's like, oh, well, an officer can't, you know, he basically says, I can't have sex with you because I'm an officer. And then he flips it to go, oh, how dare they label me and force me what to do.
It's
and then he
so
strips
good.
Down to what would have essentially been his underwear in the 60s.
Yeah.
I'm just a German boy in love with a German girl.
Yeah, just a German boy. And then the Burgermeister walks in, of course, and he does that ridiculous, like,
dance.
Goose stepping out the
calisthenics. He's like, oh, I'm here for calisthenics. One, two, one, two. And then
and
one, two,
take his uniform.
Right,
he just, one, two,
he just leaves.
It
is,
it is such
shirt
a
and pants.
Bit of Abbott Costello type of routine, right? Right. Yeah, very.
I like
it was
that
a
bit
very,
of silliness.
It was a very vaudeville moment.
Yeah,
and hilarious, especially because
I loved it.
Doing it. Yeah,
that was I love vaudevillian humor, and that was totally it. And it was easily the goofiest part of the whole movie.
And I kind of liked how it sort of it softened the edge of, like, that overall lecherousness, because I could see how it was going, where he's just assuming and taking off all his clothes, like he's just making a fucking assumption. And having the Burgermeister come in and stop him, that kind of made it okay. Because,
well,
like, right now, it's like I'm looking at a sexual assault about to happen.
Extremely easy. So, not easy, gullible is the word.
Yeah.
Every woman in that movie is extremely gullible.
Yeah. Oh,
every
dumb as a sack
single
of hammers.
One.
Yeah.
I have a sick grandma. Oh, my God, take all of my money, and here's my dress.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also. Well, I mean, again, both these characters, Lawrence and Freddie, they know they're who to victimize. You know, Freddie eyes the stupid pretty girls with lots of money, the heiresses, and Lawrence, he's going after you know, the more high class.
He hunts big game. Well,
he hunts the big game, and he's not going for $20 and a free dinner and a free lay. Well, he's going for thousands of dollars at a time.
In both movies, they talk about, like, Lawrence is like, no, the women that I target are specifically screened. They're wealthy. They're corrupt. They're people who can lose this money, and it's fine.
Yeah, they do that in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. He doesn't really specify that specifically in...
He does say that they're carefully screened in...
They're carefully screened in the first one, but they kind of make him out to be sort of like a weird Robin Hood type in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, where he is, like, basically a high-level con man in the 60s.
Conning
one.
People who can afford it.
He can afford it,
well,
yeah.
Both of them are conning people who can afford it.
Totally, but they...
On the
they,
scale of what
But they
can
spin
afford.
It in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels like, oh, well, I only con rich, gullible, corruptible people... And just same like when they find out that the soap heiress isn't really an heiress, you know.
She won a contest.
Yeah, she won a contest, which was the same in both, which was cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the Michael Caine one was like, oh, we don't go after the poor or whatever, right? Like,
They do nail it more on the head, but they also do say, in the David Niven one, they do have the exact same scene where in a car saying the bet is off. She can't afford it. Mm-hmm. She's selling off everything for that, so no.
I like how their initial meeting scene plays out on the train. It's a little different in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, but essentially plays out in the scene where Freddie is talking up what he does as, like, he thinks he's the best at what he does.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And talking about, yeah, we should live off of them for a while. And I'm like, you don't quite get what was happening before, do you?
And he's telling Lawrence everything he needs to know about this guy and how to get rid of him because he's going to be... landing on his own turf. So, you know, Freddy's just spilling his beans about what his technique is, where he's from, and he's playing it totally straight, like this is all foreign to him. And and man, just watching him play Freddy is pretty cool. And I think both Caine and Niven do it very
well. I like both of them where they talk about, I took it for $20. And he's like, well, that's not really my class. Both of them are like looking at me like,
well,
like,
and that's the
tiny little
that's
toady.
The, such a great line because that whole double entendre type of sentence.
Yeah.
You know, it's not my class and neither are you kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. You know.
He's like, I go for like higher elegant people. Yeah.
And
I'm,
those lines
not,
are... present in his dialogue in both films, which
for sure.
Nice.
Yeah. I thought the weaker sex speech, the Brando one, was better. It was a little more thought out.
Yeah.
It was
And it was more in time with its with the 60s, too. It plays better in that scenario.
Yeah, it seemed rushed through in the 80s one and left out a lot of stuff. And
sure, well, it was also less relevant.
It was also the 80s. Because, like, the 1964 one, the whole idea was, like, a woman will marry a man and put him in the ground. Like, that wasn't really the 80s.
Well, no, I mean, and it also is, you know, women are there for, you know...
They'll just suck a man dry and kill him, apparently.
Yeah, they're, well, that, and I mean, just think generalizing in the 60s, even with the commercials of the 60s, they were told to be at home, parents, and in the kitchen, and that sort of thing. I mean, that was already going away in the 80s, so it was far less relevant.
The relevance of that speech would not have worked.
Yeah, you know, women were changing by that point.
Yeah, they had to make some changes to that speech, because it really wouldn't have flown.
I feel like they should have just changed the whole thing and not gone with the weaker sex angle, because it just doesn't work. It didn't work for me, not in that new one.
No, even now, like, I watch that movie now, and there are certain things, and like, if they would remake this today, I would change the setting, and I would actually give it a more urban setting. It'd still have that high-class guy, but... and play it a more corporate thing. Wait a minute, we're slipping into remake.
Yeah, we don't want
that.
We were talking about there's one 24 years,
but I feel like
27 years. We're about due.
I feel like it can be remade again with a modern setting and a very different setting.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, with that one with Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
Like, how would
for sure. That was a good, you know, a very good film.
Well, like, what sort of setting would you make it?
You know, what's more relevant these days, you know, there's plenty of rich people trying to control the planet at this point, so, and we still all think they're dumb.
No, but like, I mean, like, the truth of it.
Tourist area, I think, would be best.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm still keeping it a tourist area.
Yeah. And yeah, they're
he also, he needs that fresh group of people coming in every year. Yeah. Like, you need it to be kind of a tourist destination so that he can stay in the same place.
Yeah, this is, like, on the French Riviera. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't constantly do a con with the same people around.
No.
Yeah, they'll catch on eventually.
That's true, and the tourist areas are the best place.
And you need like yeah. Cannes and like the French Riviera still
the original,
play places for the rich.
Is primarily shot at Cannes, by the way.
Yeah,
yeah.
So like, yeah, they're where rich people play. So like, you kind of have to keep it in something similar like that. I think
you kind of have to change the story a bit because I mean, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels still stands as a comedy.
Yeah,
classic,
I think
so.
You'd probably do less in Jewels. I think that would be less Jewel gimmick in the new one.
Yeah, well, they kind of played that down a bit too, even in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Like, it was like a string of pearls, right?
They don't concentrate on as much. So you don't see them conning near as many women out of their jewels. They just kind of move along with the setups. Well, we did it once, you've seen it.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
And to be fair, like, Cartier wasn't sponsoring Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah, they didn't have any jewels. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But
did he have a nice house in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh my God, how beautiful was that?
Yeah, that was an amazing
There's one
beachfront property.
Exceptional difference I noticed between Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and Bedtime Story is in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, every time Lawrence gets information about Freddy or something happens, in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Michael Caine is up having breakfast or doing something or in the pool. In Bedtime Story, David Niven is
always
in bed.
Yeah.
And getting woken up to be told that Freddy's done something.
He's actually
Oh, maybe there's
with
the story.
Yeah, I guess.
Bedtime Story.
Yeah.
And something very interesting about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and I'm going to, you won't see it because this is an audio podcast, but in the trailer, which I'm going to run here in a minute, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels has a scene where Steve Martin pushes a person into the water. And mm-hmm. Dave and Michael Caine is shoving an ice cream in a kid's face while they're walking along. This is one of the first examples where they shot something specifically for
the
trailer, and that was never intended for a film.
Yeah, that was never in
which
the
is
movie.
Yeah, which no. is something they've gotten away from. And I kind of, you know, I think it used to irritate the shit out of me when I was younger. And now I kind of like, oh, that's too bad. I wouldn't mind actually seeing something new in my trailers, but.
Yeah.
Well, we could have a whole podcast about what I think about the art of the trailer nowadays. So let's just move on and run the trailer.
Yeah, okay. we better get to that now.
Let's run the trailer and we'll talk some more about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and Bedtime Story.
Steve Martin and Michael Caine are competitors in the Riviera's most profitable business, but with very different styles.
Do you have any idea what it feels like to take a woman for $20?
No, I haven't. I'm afraid it's a little out of my class.
Can two con men survive in a town really made for one?
Really? We find a woman, set a price, and the first man to extract the correct amount from her wins.
Wish me luck.
Let the contest begin.
If I lose, I'll leave. If I win, you leave.
To prove once and for all who is the dirtiest, the rottenest.
Doofuses.
The sleaziest, the sneakiest, the phoniest.
Thank you, Your Highness.
The trickiest.
Don't you ever have an emotion that originates above the waist?
No!
The all-time champion of dirty, rotten scoundrels.
Surely he was no match for you.
I'm younger than you, better looking than you, I'm thinner than you.
Know your limitations. You are a moron.
Steve Martin is the man no woman can resist.
Eat your food.
Excuse me. May I go to the bathroom first?
Of course you may.
Thank you.
And Michael Caine is...
Lawrence Jameson.
Chips O'Toole. Dr. Emil Schaffhausen. Sir.
And they're both dirty, rotten scoundrels.
You want the whole world to know.
Dirty, rotten scoundrels. You mustn't turn your back on them for a second.
Hi, guys. It's Lee Ehrenberg from Pirates of the Caribbean and now ABC's Once Upon a Time. You're listening to Invasion of the Remake. Hope you enjoy.
All right, that was a trailer for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Now, there was a line I really liked in both films when Freddy finally comes to town and gets arrested. And the cop, he's like, to be with another woman, that is French. To be caught, that is American. Which is a great line. And, you know, what happens is he's fleeced this rich girl that Lawrence had his eyes on. He saw in the paper was coming to town and arrives with Freddy. So now he's a little mad and sets it up. So he takes this heiress around and follows Freddy while he's spending her money. So she lays an official complaint. That's what lands him in jail. And then he calls Lawrence, and that sets up the whole thing with being the protege and whatnot. Well, that sets him up for the first time when they're trying to get rid of him, actually.
Yes.
It's like he bails him out of jail. And says, you know,
in both instances, like, if we put him on a plane, we won't charge him with anything.
Yeah. And on the plane, he meets Miss Fanny from Omaha.
Yeah,
because she spots him on the plane speaking to Lawrence, and she still thinks that he is a prince, and it's like, what's the secret mission you're on?
Are you on a mission for the prince?
And next thing you know,
he didn't have the accent. In the
back
movie.
On a plane and back in the French Riviera.
Yeah. Hello? He's got great turnaround on that. I wonder where he stopped, because it was like a
Paris.
Plane. Yeah,
the plane stopped in Paris. It would have been a stopover. So.
They said that in jail. The one with Marlon Brando was a way better scene, of course, where they're trying to, like, justify why he's doing what he's doing. And I wish I could remember the line, but it's like, oh, something happened in childhood that led him to this way of life. And
it was something completely... He was not cuddled by his mother or, like,
potty trained
wrong. Something
ridiculous,
wrong.
And Brando's got that stupid Gilligan hat, and he's like, yes, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It just was really
funny. He totally did. He looked like he had the red shirt and the Gilligan hat, and I'm like, whoa.
He looked goofy, and it was great.
The jail scene was better. Really weird. The thing I like, too, when they do the tail thing in both movies, and of course in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, they tell you he's the cop. But even when she goes, thanks, Inspector, blah, 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 I actually thought up to that point it was still a con.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't really a cop. And
he never
was,
plays official until he puts Freddy in jail.
And I was like, whoa. But the one thing I didn't understand in both, and maybe you guys can clarify this, like, I get, like, getting sucked into the con and giving the guy this money or whatever. How did he end up with a car in both fucking movies?
I don't know.
Oh, take my car.
I think that might have been what happened. Like, the woman was just stupid. That's all I can figure out.
Both times.
Yeah. Both times.
Yeah, and the car was a way better get in the first movie.
Or maybe they were just, maybe the whole point was too, is like, well, you have to get to Sweden to see your grandmother so you can borrow my car. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. And he just goes shopping.
Yeah, he always goes shopping.
Yeah, and he buys way better clothes in the first movie too.
Oh, yes. The second, the Steve Martin clothes he's wearing, I'm like, oh, no. No.
Steve Martin's always the lovable tramp, and they can't get away from it, right?
Yeah, those are just terrible clothes.
Well, it's meant to fine point, you know, he's not in the same class, right? He's buying suburban clothes.
His wrinkly linen jacket in every scene until...
his, like, linen shorts?
Yeah, well, French Riviera, it's probably warm there, I don't know.
I'm sorry, it just looks stupid.
Reminded me of when he has, like, all that money in The Jerk.
Oh, yeah.
Remember The Jerk, the greatest Steve Martin movie ever made?
I don't know. The Man with Two Brains. I still like that better.
The Jerk. I was born a poor black child. It's just the best movie.
Mm.
Let's do The Jerk. I'm pitching that right on the show. One day we have to just... I don't even want to remake it. We just need to talk about it because...
Yeah, because I'm like, I don't know how you would remake that with anybody but Steve Martin.
No, it's only Steve Martin. But yeah, that's an amazing movie. So anybody who watched Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and loves Steve Martin now, go watch The Jerk. In my opinion, his best movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely Steve at his best. For sure. Well, we should actually just get to Janet.
Yes.
You know, because we haven't really talked about her too much. So, you know, they've been fleecing. The training happens, and...
Women as Ruprecht, the monkey boy.
Yeah, after he comes back, he basically has Lawrence over a barrel, where he's like, oh, this whole prince angle, I am so out of my league. I thought I was the best, but you're the best.
Yeah.
Teach me, oh wonderful.
Yeah.
Song. And I love in the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels that Lawrence's butler is Emperor Palpatine.
Yes.
Is he really? I never made that connection.
Ewan McDermott.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Ian McDermott. That's right. I saw his name come up in the credits, and I just didn't recognize
him. So, you know, back in the day, that was the first time I watched it and actually realized who his butler was. So just every time he's being mean to Steve Martin.
Yeah.
And he never liked Steve Martin. I just think he's going to blow up his head with the Force or something.
Steve Martin was so rude to him. I get it.
Yeah, well, true.
I love the line at the end.
And now we know the birth of the Emperor. It was in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, my God. That's how that happened. Holy crap,
it was because
guys.
Steve Martin wrecked his VCR.
Yeah, which we never see.
We never see it.
Yeah, he's like, sorry about wrecking your, what do you say, your VHS player.
Your VHS player,
yeah. Give me the model and number, and I'll send you a check. And then Emperor Palpatine is like, oh, shut up, and just walks away.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's a scene that hit the cutting room floor there or something.
But they didn't cut the line.
No.
It was funny. Sorry, I wrecked your VHS player.
I imagine it was done as Ruprecht. I kind of imagine that's what happened.
Maybe it would happen.
I feel like Ruprecht went out of control after
everything resolved. Just hanging out, and he put a grilled cheese in there or something. And
yeah, yeah.
No, it doesn't strike me.
So what was the point in the movies? Because... you know, he's learning, and he gets tired, I think, of being Ruprecht, and he's going to go solo again.
It's when he doesn't get the money. That's when he doesn't get his cut, whether it's taxation or Michael Caine's a dick, he just doesn't get his cut, and he's like, all right, screw this. And that's when they both show up. And I don't think it initially was a contest. They just end up at the same table.
Well, in the first film, it was... one of the backup characters who mentions this person is coming to town.
It's the Cobb.
Yeah.
Says the soap queen.
Whereas they just picked somebody at random in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
No, they say soap queen.
Oh, yeah.
It does come up.
When she's dropping her luggage and stuff, somebody says that's the soap queen.
Well, they're discussing that it must be a bet. Then she arrives quickly. And they're like, okay, fine. This is the person.
This is the mark. Yeah.
So it's like first one to $20,000 in Bedtime Stories, first one to $50,000 in the 88s.
Oh, 25 in Bedtime Story.
Whatever.
Yeah, 25. Yeah. You're correct. Yeah, 25.
25 and
sorry,
50.
It makes a difference. That's $5,000 different, guys.
They never get there. So it makes no damn difference whatsoever.
Well, in 1964, $5,000 cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Although Steve does get some winnings from his initial outing. They're at the roulette wheel, and Lawrence cozies up to her and is kind of about to make his move, and then he wheels in his wheelchair thing, his traumatic veteran full... where, you know.
Oh, and he just... Ugh.
It's a terrible angle in both films.
He's not... You know, I just hate Steve Martin in this movie the more I think about it. He's not good. He chews that scene when he rolls up.
Especially when he's in those wheelchair scenes, he totally chews all those scenes.
Everything up. And the way, like, his delivery... is so forced.
I loved when Michael Caine's whipping him.
Yeah, testing the legs. That's good. I like that, when he
takes a
running
start.
That plays
way better than the Brando stuff.
It totally does. But like every other scene, he just hams it so much. Like even with 60s gullible women, no one would buy that.
No,
because Brando didn't ham it like that.
No, and especially in the 80s, I really didn't think it plays well there.
No, it doesn't.
Well, the whole 80s thing, like, that's the thing. The story in the 80s, I don't see it.
That's weird.
No, when I watch Dirty Rotten Scandals, especially after the 60s, it still plays out like a 60s movie.
Yeah.
It does, yeah.
But I mean, like, the story, like, I would have updated the story for the 80s. And I, like, not say, like, we were childhood sweethearts and we were, like, dance hall, whatever, and then she ran off with the host.
That story doesn't work.
There's no dance. I don't. Solid Gold was the only dance thing I remember from the 80s,
well,
and that's not right.
They said Dance USA, and I don't even know what that is.
I think Dance USA used to be like kind of, American Bandstand type of deal, I think is what they're trying to get at.
Yeah.
But that like you say, but that story doesn't work. Like if they had a different story about like he had this woman, then they fell in love, and then like then he got messed in the head, like just a different way of doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that backstory doesn't work here, right? It makes perfect sense in a 60s Hollywood picture where you could have a 5-minute waltz with somebody and then get married directly after. Like, that's just how that goes, right?
Oh, and then, like, the bit where he's like
still
a Bible...
It's pretty dumb to play the sympathy of that.
True, but I liked in the other one in the 60s where he added the bit where he's like, she was a Bible school teacher and I was a Bible school teacher.
Yeah.
And I thought a Bible school teacher wouldn't hurt me like this.
Yeah. See, that's how Brando plays it up. He doesn't ham it up. He, like, just adds all this ridiculous, heartstring crap that
that
wouldn't fly in the 80s one. So,
oh,
yeah.
No.
I mean, it's very easy to tell in the new one when ad-libbing's happening because it deviates from the original film.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's when, you know, Steve Martin or Michael Caine, it's usually Steve Martin saying something completely retarded. It works for Steve Martin for what he's trying to do, the way he's portraying the character.
Yeah.
It's not too out of character, but sometimes it's kind of jarring. The Rupert thing in the car earlier in the movie, and he mentioned something about his balls dropping. That's something that had never played in the
80s. That doesn't work.
And it still feels out of character in the 80s.
But the shot of them driving is like the exact same shot in both movies, but the woman in the middle is doing the exact same thing. Like, I could have sworn it was the same actress. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. Like, just that look of like, holy crap.
Right.
That whole bit was funny. And then they even threw in a second. Like, I kind of remember in the Brando one where that sequence, like, it's all to get rid of that one woman.
Yeah.
But then they, like, bring in another woman. So, like, it shows that they've done it multiple times. Where I don't think you get that impression in the original that they did it twice.
Yeah, not in the original. You don't get the impression it's more than one person. In Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, it's a few.
Yeah, the corked fork woman was different than the... The driving woman or whatever, yeah.
Frances Conroy is in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Just like, she has one line. She's a fantastic actress. So it's fun to watch her, like, this movie with just such a tiny, tiny part.
Yeah. And, with heiresses now being so public, I get the feeling if they did a remake, you would see, like, fucking Kim Kardashian. And
oh, you'd see versions of it.
Hilton's. At least very deliberate
references
too. At
least you could buy that they're
too,
gullible.
Right?
Yeah. Like, the thing is, I think what would be different too is you couldn't have like that Prince angle. That wouldn't work. You'd maybe have to have like a movie producer.
Or
music producer.
It'd be whoever's doing the Freddy character. I don't know, Andy Samberg or somebody. Like, I'm trying to make sex tapes, and then
I think the Lawrence character would be younger, but he would probably be like a music producer, like hip and happening, and then like the Freddy character would still be reprehensible, but he would have to be part of the package deal.
I don't know. You could play him more like Mark Zuckerberg or something. It's like, they stole my idea. It'd be the other half of the Facebook guys.
Yeah. Leeching on women through the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. So they start their con with Janet trying to get her, you know, it's $50,000 for this therapy. And for some reason, he's still in both films, they're not on to this police chief. So he's following him everywhere, figuring out what Freddy's scam is, and then reporting back to Lawrence. This is what he's doing. And I'm like, all right, there's my character. I'm going to be this super therapist that he made up.
Emil
Schufhausen. And,
but it turns out in the first movie that is a real person.
Yeah, he actually
was.
It was.
They find records, and that's what clues Janet in that
to that scam. That's not that's the scam. But also, David Niven doesn't do an accent either.
But never actually outs Freddy.
David Niven does not do an accent.
That's kind of what ends it. It ends it for David Niven's character. Well, he's been outed, but it never actually... She discovers it, but it never actually comes to play.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't...
She runs off and marries
Freddy. I think she believes Freddy was conned into believing that this guy could help him.
Yeah.
Because she's dumb enough to believe
that. Freddy just had fallen in love and decided, no, this isn't a con anymore. This is...
I've fallen in love with her, and I'm like, really?
And he felt bad. And
they've known each other for 20 minutes. In the 60s, it's a lifetime. So,
I just don't buy it.
And then at the end of the movie,
they run off on a
cruise
strip.
Yes,
dear. And that cruise is like paid for by Niven. So,
yeah. That was something initially. So, I don't know if you guys got the whole... I don't feel like the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels angle came out of nowhere.
No.
When I was watching Bedtime Stories, I felt throughout that Janet was conning them. I kind of got that impression.
I was hoping.
I expected it to kind of turn that way.
Yeah,
and it never did. And then you get like the resolution of the character.
Which maybe
and
that hint of is what inspired
what
it.
What inspired it, yeah.
I think so.
Because it's there very subtly, but it always felt like she was conning them.
I felt,
and of course she wasn't.
Yeah,
but.
I felt like the Janet in Bedtime Stories was conning them more than Janet Colgate in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
I felt
picked up
more,
on that.
Yeah.
So when we got to where I had remembered the ending being, Lawrence never gets outed, and Freddy doesn't get that resolution of character. He doesn't oh, wait, I was wrong, whatever, right? And so I kind of was, like, mad. I'm like, well, that was a stupid choice because, like, you have this character who's a dirtbag and then he finds love and whatever, and that should still be in this movie. And then they do the twist, and I was like, oh, well, fuck, I thought this was going to happen in the first movie. So then I wasn't surprised. I was sort of angry that they went that way. But, I don't know.
You know,
in the first movie, I was very unhappy at the ending.
The gags are pretty much the same all the way along, you know, the wheelchairs and stuff. He tries at one point. Freddy tries to get rid of David Niven.
Oh yeah,
or Lawrence. In both films, actually, he tries
to
get rid
of
him the same way. There's soldiers at this dance club.
Yes,
and you know, he's goading Freddy. Get up, get out of your chair, come dance with us.
Yeah,
and
the guys are like, "What a jerk!"
Yeah, what a jerk! What a dick! Do you want him to disappear? You know, we can have him on the next.
In
bus
Bedtime
to
Story, it's to Iceland, and in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, it's to Honduras.
Honduras, that's it.
Nice.
So, yeah, the destination was different, but the intent was the same. And they were
paratroopers
in the first one, and then they were
Navy guys.
Navy reserves, British Navy reserves.
Yeah, British Navy.
In the
well, no, they were strictly British Navy. But Lawrence was Naval Reserve.
Yeah, and either way, he had the little card in his wallet.
Yeah.
Well, because paratroopers wouldn't make sense in 88.
Yeah.
No.
Although,
but we missed the best gag with the paratroopers, because they are not paratroopers. But when they go, he comes back and he's like, oh, where's Freddy? Well, he tried to escape, so we inducted him and he got his first jump and he's just hanging off the side of the building on the paratroopers.
Yeah. That was great.
I like that.
Again, a really funny moment that they didn't use in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Well, so they just glued him to the door, which I thought was dumb.
Which it wasn't nearly as funny as the other one.
There's also, what was it, the montage of where they're doing fun things. And it was like, oh, we must show him Freddy. We are having such a great time.
Yeah.
And in Bedtime Story, the montage was slightly better because they have a bit where, like, they bury him in sand on the beach.
With the seagull.
While they're out boating.
Another really goofy cartoon moment. But
it's silly, but I loved it.
Brando talking to a seagull is amazing.
It's fantastic.
And then the seagull trying to feed Brando a fish. Like, this relationship just isn't working.
And then
the seagull comes back later.
Oh, later when he's just in the wheelchair sitting there watching.
Callback.
And there's another bit where they're in like a glider and he's trying to follow them down on the ground.
He's trying to follow us.
And then he ends up
wheeling.
The horseback one they repeated.
Yep.
Don't look back. Yeah, that whole bit was really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. They added more, I think, in the first one, which was
that
fun.
Ballroom torture scene and
he's on the floor.
Yeah, and the whipping the leg scene's funny in both. It's a little bit better in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yes.
It's a lot more sadistic and dirty.
It is more sadistic.
Oh, and that's what makes it funny.
That's what makes it a
also
bit
watching Michael Caine go tickle, tickle, tickle. That's pretty funny.
Yes.
Steve Martin has some big feet, though. I'll say that.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Although, you know, I don't know why.
He probably does some barefoot surfing on those.
Maybe.
Probably.
I don't know why I went there with that sequence, but like, so he takes the one shoe off, whatever, and tickles and doesn't work. And like, I guess he's just like putting his foot down, but they shoot it from the back. So I, honest to God, thought that Michael Caine was going to, like, put Steve Martin's toe in his mouth or something. Like, you see that coming? It never happened, but I was like, that would be a really weird place to go right now. And then he totally doesn't, but, like, I just seemed like, because of the over-the-shoulder
thing.
But,
hey, if he wants him to
there
break.
There is an outtake of that.
Gonna,
I want to see it.
If he's going to make him break, I
that
guarantee
it,
you
yeah.
sucking on his toes, he'd be like, I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm out.
I'm out.
Bet is off. I will leave this place forever.
Yep. I thought that was going to happen. I mean, it didn't, which is good because that would have been creepy.
Yeah, and I thought the suicide break, the fake suicide break of Freddy, where he, you know, writes the note and is going to drown himself. Well, in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, he just starts rolling himself over to the pool.
I thought it was going to be at the pool, but he has to go down to the beach for some reason.
Bedtime Story.
He steals
a riding lawnmower.
And did you notice he's wearing a mesh shirt?
Yes.
It is amazing. It is so
and no
it's
one
wonderful.
No one questions how. Oh, I guess she wasn't there, was she, when he stole lawn, when they found the gardener?
Yeah, no. The gardener was back at the house.
The gardener,
okay. She was at the hotel leaving at the time to go meet them, I
think. Yeah, he knocked the shit out of
the
gardener.
Yeah, like knocked the gardener out and tied him up.
He lawnmower jacked that thing. He didn't just do it when he wasn't paying attention.
Oh, for sure.
He tied him up and gagged him. Yeah, and a lawnmower's like weird because it's the 60s. Yeah,
it's like a super, super ride along. Like imagine a ride, like a Mad Max ride along mower. Yeah. Is
you,
what it
you
was.
Get the feeling Brando's a little more off his rocker than Steve Martin.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was a really funny scene. I forgot about that scene, actually.
Oh, and there's a subtle bit, too, when she's trying to make him feel better.
Yeah, we're skipping so much ahead to the key moments that I wanted to touch on some of these smaller moments that were really funny.
There's a bit, too, where she's putting suntan lotion on him, and he's like, would you put some on my legs while she's putting them on his legs? And I'm like, I love that look, because like, you can tell he's thinking that he's like, if I just I'm going to sell it, just this little bit here.
Yeah, he sells it more, for sure. I don't know. It never went across well with Martin. I just felt like he was too obvious, and like it should just be so obvious that he can walk.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like you were saying, how you thought that Brando's getting up and being stiff and whatever, but it wasn't any better with Martin.
Oh,
it was
Martin
sexier
looks weird.
What's her face's robe like breaks open when she's by the bed all of a sudden. But and then yeah, they go to make out, and then the crisscross happens.
Right.
Criss-cross.
Oh, but criss-cross. The reveal in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is better than in Bedtime Story, because in Bedtime Story you kind of see him walk past Niven as he walks into the room. Whereas Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, you don't find out till he gets to the bed and he gets to her.
And well, he says the line, "We all love you," and
we all love you. Yeah.
It's like, oh shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can just see the look on Steve Martin's face, like, oh, god damn it.
Yeah.
And then she plays in both times, which I thought was good. She's like, oh my god, you're totally right. You said he'd show up, and you said he'd fall in love with me, and you said he'd walk. And yeah it was
that,
funny.
That scene plays the
played
same.
In.
Yeah.
Still super gullible. Although, you know, with the twist ending, it makes sense that she's super gullible in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, because she's playing the scam.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But then in the original, they're just dumb. They're just dumb.
Yeah, so Lawrence tries to put her on the plane. You can't say goodbye. That'll maybe put him back in the chair, you know, be traumatic or whatever.
Because in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, he's like, I just have to get you out of here. Make sure that you're away from this terrible, terrible man, because I believe that you're a wonderful woman.
Yeah, and that scene plays a bit differently. Because doesn't Brando go chasing after her?
No, he puts her on a train. Niven puts her on a train, but before the train leaves, there's a telegram that says Dr. Emil Schoffhausen has been dead for like 40 years.
And she gets off.
She's the one that gets off, because she gets the telegram just before getting on the train, asks the guy to take off her bags, and comes back.
She confronts and says that Lawrence is a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
But she never learns that Brando played into the fraud.
No, she doesn't.
No,
that's the weird. That's the thing that kind of unsettles me about that movie.
It ends really quickly. Like suddenly it's like game off.
Yeah, all of a sudden he falls in love and then marries her like that night. And I'm like going, and then she's really no wiser as to what kind of person he is.
And you get the feeling that,
and like, she's entered into a bad marriage.
Yeah,
this is not going to go well.
You get the feeling, Lawrence, this was his intent all along. Right?
Kind of, because she kind of plays he just does the yes dear thing at the end.
Yeah, because
which
she
is
says
extremely out of character.
I believe that you should be the master of your castle at home. The man is in charge. Yes, dear. I'm like,
and she doesn't sell it. She's like, oh, the apartment that my mom picked out and the job we've lined up for you at the soap factory. And I'm like, wow, that sounds great.
Yeah, and someone like him, do you think he's going to be happy like that? No. And he's probably going to be busy trying to bang whoever's at the soap company. Like, this is, I just don't, like, I can watch this whole thing unfolding and I'm like, wait, this is going to end terribly.
Yeah, she's going to end.
You know,
up
and
being,
David Niven is like, who's happier? Oh, he's happier because he has love. No, he's happy for about a month or two, and then he's not happy anymore.
Yeah, you get the feeling, Brando's character probably would have walked off. And
although it could be
else.
Brando's character realizes the con has been foiled by her because of this telegram, and he knows he's not going to get any money, so he's just finding an easy out. So he leaves. Like, they go to America, right? He's like, oh, I'm out. Right.
He's getting married to avoid confrontation?
Yeah.
Oh, great. That's a good idea.
Because she says that...
Wouldn't be the first time a man did that.
Yeah. Well,
I just couldn't face anything else. We got married.
They have that 60s mentality for marriage, though, where it's like, oh, you're going to like dictate to me what life is going to be like. I mean, she says that to him. So they're going to... they're going to land, and he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, immediately.
I mean, he's won the bet at this point, too.
So I guess Dirty Rotten Scoundrels has a happier ending?
Oh, it has a much happier ending.
Well, yeah, she totally scams them, because Steve Martin is, you know, got her in the bedroom. And
she's like, right, you know,
I'm going to seal the deal.
The
I'm going to win this bet, and it's going to be my territory. And she's like, can you close the curtains? Can you turn off the lights?
Can you take a shower?
Can you take a shower? That's the story. And
how long was his shower? Like, because they find him there, and I'm like, well, she had to have been gone a little while. Like,
I don't know. But yeah, he, you know, he gets out and she's gone with his clothes and whatnot, right? So,
and he's got a robe on. I'm sorry, if he can leave in that robe.
Yeah, and
why is he worried about his clothes?
Well, and Kane's Lawrence thinks that Steve Martin not only bedded her and took all of her
and
money.
And took her money, including her change purse.
And then ran off.
My little change purse.
Because, yeah,
purse.
She comes running back crying. To Lawrence, crying. It's like, oh, he said all these things, and he lied
like,
to me.
And you know what? I'm betting that he could probably walk all along, and he was just faking it.
Yeah. In reality, she took everything that
yeah. So
that Steve Martin had, including
so
his winnings.
So Lawrence covers her losses.
And covers her losses. So she gets the 50 grand worth of stuff that she claims she got. You know, this was all her reward money, selling off her furniture and
car
and but she had to keep the mink.
Yeah.
And
she stole.
And you know, she also stole the winnings. I think it was $5,000 of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah.
That Steve Martin had won at the roulette table.
Yeah.
So she steals that and everything else he had.
I know.
So she gets about 55 grand and swans off on the plane.
Yep. And then, but at the end, I loved like just the reaction of like Lawrence, like with Michael Caine. Isn't she wonderful? Like he's just
twice because she convinces him. He says that before.
Yeah.
It's another callback. He says that about her because she is so pure and innocent.
Like she's generous.
I never thought I'd meet somebody like that was like you. And oh, aren't you wonderful? I think I even wrote that line down.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
But like at the end, he's just so amused by how well she played them both. Like I love the fact that he's like, I respect that lady. I'm happy this happened. I am okay with it.
And the character's twist too, right? Like the way she presents herself and talks and is like super aggressive. And
yeah. Oh yeah.
At she creates the backstory like while she's talking for them.
There is the callback. Yeah, like then that what we have revealed yet, where they're talking about like at the end of the season, and all of a sudden they hear these people coming. He's like, "All right, everybody, yeah, come on, come on."
Yeah, she got that Brooklyn accent and
Nikos, come over here.
Yeah, she's brought a bunch of investors,
wealthy.
Yeah, Nikos like, I want to invest this $3 million in property. I want to do somewhere new. I say, okay, where? He says Australia. I'm like, oh, then it hits me. You got to see Chips O'Toole, the son of Australia.
Chips O'Toole. That was her Australian name. That was good.
Yeah.
And then he drops the shrimp on the Barbie. And it's funny, too. He's not doing an Australian accent. It's like his Cockney British accent, but they don't know any different. And then she makes Steve Martin mute.
No, that's not too bad.
Yeah,
Australian-ish.
This is his
partner, but he's mute.
He's a mute.
And this is kind of her way of saying it was, you know... She does get a moment when she sends him off to the house.
Yeah, everybody go ahead. Go up the stairs. Keep going. Keep going.
Yeah, and she says, you know, it wasn't a lot of money, but this has been fun.
She
normally makes like
$3 million
a year. $3 million
that year, but their 50 grand
was the most
fun.
Yeah, and this is kind of her way of like, okay, this is my payback. You guys, we'll get your cash back off of this grift, right?
Oh, for sure. Like, and I like the idea where she's like, oh, I had fun with you guys. Come on, let's play.
Yeah.
Let's do a game together.
It's a different kind of less schmaltzy ending.
Yes.
Yeah.
It changes the Janet character like just completely, where she's just not so much of a soppy victim.
Yeah. Although fun fact, when that earlier scene where he first comes in as the wheelchair, Freddy comes in on the wheelchair at the roulette table and he wants to sell off one of his medals.
Yeah.
Military medals are made of pot metal for that very fact, so you can't get a lot of money for them.
Yes.
It's meant to be symbolic for your service.
Yes.
So I found that interesting. I'm like, oh, that would have got you like 10 bucks,
nothing,
20 bucks,
yeah.
Maybe.
Is that an 88 or like 64?
It's 64. He's got the pin. He's trying to hawk the pin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what were the pins still made of?
Well, they're still military medals. And yes, it was always like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is that like a sly comment on military service being worthless? I don't know.
Ooh.
What's it?
Or that we don't value military service at all?
Yeah, I wonder if that's what...
Well, yeah, you know, but you could certainly make some sort of...
Because, like, why couldn't he have, like, a silver cigarette case or
you
something?
Figure if you earn the medal, it'd be some value to
but
that.
But it could be that, I mean, obviously...
I mean, they do get paid for their service. So.
Yeah.
But... Yeah,
That's a high level of sympathy is what it is in both movies. It goes, oh, well, I've got this because, you know, I served and I'm in a wheelchair. And then both the roulette guys are like, well, it's not worth anything.
Yeah, we can't take it.
All you had was your service and now it's worthless. I don't know. Yeah, weird.
Yeah.
It's very sad. You know, also the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels kind of glamorizes scamming people. Just to throw that in there.
Yeah,
it's
like
scamming people is awesome. Where in the other one, you sort of get that, oh, wait, maybe it's not great. Maybe you just need to
But I think it's because they put on that like Robin Hood type of idea where it's like, yeah, they're rich, but they can afford to lose it. Like it's just, and these aren't great people. Because like I remember one line, one of the women where they're doing the Ruprecht game. And he's like, so, Cynthia, you were saying that the poor shouldn't be allowed into art museums?
Yeah, that's right.
Like they're just, the women are terrible people. So yeah,
they're either really stupid or really horrible. Yeah. So the moral of both stories is women are horrible.
Yeah. Well,
so I don't know what it is about our last three episodes of really terrible people. You know, we did the two car movies and this one, and I think that was what the theme rolled out at unintentionally. we did three movies in a row about really horrible people.
Yeah, we sort of did. Yeah.
Although I don't know, like the Lawrence character in both movies. I still liked, even though he was a con artist, he had a certain moral, like he had a certain code. He was good, but he also had a certain code about like what he would do, who he would con. Like he wasn't without some sort of idea.
It's like stealing cars from people with insurance. Right, exactly. So this movie is basically used cars without the cars.
No, that was Gone in 60 Seconds.
Oh, Gone in 60 Seconds was used
Gone in 60
cars
Seconds was
cars.
The insurance thing.
Oh, that's right.
Now, I got something for you people out there listening. I've got a sick grandmother out there, and what you can do...
PayPal donation.
You can... No, what you can do is rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Tell your friends. It'll help my grandmother greatly. As well, you can, you know, drop us a line over at on our Facebook page. It's Invasion of the Remake at Facebook. At Invasion Remake on Twitter, at Invasion Remake on Twitter. And, of course, invasionoftheremake@gmail.com if you want to do the whole email thing.
True.
But can't stress this enough. Rate, review, and tell them to subscribe. It only is a few seconds. And my grandmother will be so grateful.
Yeah, she really needs it.
She's
going to die without a broken heart.
Without knowing that we are the best podcast out there right now.
I mean, if she has to die not knowing that, that's on you guys.
That's totally on you guys. No, totally no pressure you. Or nothing, hey?
So.
Why isn't the studio wheelchair accessible?
Well, we can lift the wheelchair up over the one step.
I have one step outside. She can't go to the bathroom up here, but
well, maybe if you convince me that you love me,
that's
I'll
why
get
there's
up
depends.
And walk up the step.
But actually, now that you're talking about like the cons, I can understand why it probably hasn't been remade in like the longest time because like now the cons are Nigerian princes and spam emails and like forward me your credit information or spam bots. I think that's why, because that's the new Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah, I remember I got an email once that said my dad had died, so I called him and I said, I got bad news for you.
You're dead.
Yeah. You died.
The latest one that I got, I've gotten a couple times now from in my spam folder, and I think it's hilarious and brilliant. The whole Ashley Madison hack?
Yeah.
It basically says, we know what you did. All you have to do is
send
5 euros and this all goes away. Otherwise, I tell your family, your friends, or whatever, and I'll be like, I read through the whole thing. I'm like, this is amazing. But I was never on Ashley Madison, so I don't give a shit. And I'm also single, so it wouldn't have mattered.
Ladies.
I didn't. Yeah. If I had been on there, I would have done nothing
I have trouble.
Wrong.
Yeah, I have trouble getting one person, much
honestly,
less trying to juggle two or three things at the same
no
time.
I had no idea that was for cheating wives and husbands. Like, I didn't know that's what
yeah,
that
I thought
was
it was
for.
Like a porn
I thought it,
video website.
No, it was. Well,
I actually
did you
just
hear?
Thought it was a dating site.
You remember
no
the 19
idea,
Kids and Counting?
You'd see those late night ads, right? I thought it was.
Yeah. It was for the discreet cheating site. But one of the guys, Josh Duggar from 19 Kids and Counting, had like two Ashley Madison accounts.
That's hilarious.
I know. What's great is that you know you can't be monogamous when you can't be monogamous on a cheating site with more than one fucking account. I can't commit to one account. I need two accounts.
We should just get back to the 1-900 numbers. Remember those on late night TV? Like, finish watching both episodes of Tales from the Crypt
at
like
2
in the morning, and be like, there's always that like really excited guy. And he's like, it's live, one on one, and totally discreet. It's discreet.
Yes, remember when chat rooms you were actually chatting on a phone?
See, yeah. I don't remember that guy. I remember this like going,
give us a call.
I'm waiting for you. I've been so lonely. I just want somebody to talk to.
Oh, our listeners under 20 don't the fuck.
And the whole time I'm like, bitch, go outside. Sitting by the phone.
This entire podcast, anybody under 20 would not know what the hell we're talking about.
We've dated ourselves so much right now.
Because the newest movie in this podcast is 27 years old.
Gone in 60 seconds.
Well, no, I'm talking about the newer movie. Out of the two we did today is 27 years old.
Yeah, true.
So this is, I think, one of the oldest ones we've done.
Yeah. The newer movie is going to go to its high school reunion.
Remakes have happened since the dawn of cinema, and we can even do older ones. So
we could go back to the 30s and 40s and stuff that's done 4 or 5 times.
Woo!
Oh, so man, excited. I don't even know like if we would have the stamina to do Frankenstein. But
we're going
to
do Dracula. All 47 remakes of Dracula.
Yeah, all 27 remakes of Dracula.
If anybody can find me the complete reels for Thomas Edison's Frankenstein, please let me know, because there's only about 20 minutes that I think actually exist.
That still exists.
Nice.
And I've only ever seen the 20 minutes.
So. I can't do it. I'm sorry, guys. I got no tolerance for silent movies. I really tried, and I just can't get into them.
We can't get you watching subtitles.
Yeah,
we can't
get you watching silent
movies. I love The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari with a very deep passion, and I don't think we'd have Tim Burton without it. So
yeah.
True.
Well, any of that early cinema, we wouldn't have anybody.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's true. So thank you for our forebearers for some awesome cinema. it's very funny that other than the title change, how close Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is to Bedtime Story. They are very similar watches.
Bedtime Stories with Adam Sandler.
No, don't watch that.
No.
It's not that funny.
To be fair, I think this is probably the best example we've had of a remake where it actually did stay so close to the source material.
Yeah.
But I find that the ending, some of the retooling they did, really does work in its favor.
I love how they downplayed that, though, even in the 80s, and said it inspired... it inspired Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I'm like, no.
It is
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah, just a shitty title. The only step further would be like those shot-for-shot remakes like Psycho and stuff. Like, it almost was the same.
And there's a bunch of shot-for-shots on that one, too.
This is easily the closest comparison we've done, which is kind of when you listen to us talk, we're not breaking down each individual. Because the scenes are... the same throughout both these movies, without, you know, with minor tweaks here and there. They're very much the same movie.
I feel that Michael Caine played David Niven.
Yeah.
Like, overall, yes, the same. I think that's what he was
His
doing.
His performance was almost identical. Yeah. The only real disparity in both movies was the characterization of Freddy was totally different. And maybe
I didn't think it's completely different. I would see sometimes I would see the similarities, like even watching Bedtime Story, having memories because I watched them in order, but I'd seen Dirty Rotten Scoundrels a few times. I could see some of Steve Martin's performances, where his inspirations would come from Brando, because I could see it in Brando's performance. So, you know, there's stuff there, but overall, which ones did you guys prefer?
I preferred Brando, definitely. I really liked both David Niven and Michael Caine, like, because they're very similar.
Yeah.
And I greatly preferred the police guy in the original. I think of the two movies, I actually preferred the original overall.
See, and I preferred the remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, because I felt the ending... just made it more satisfying all, overall. But as I say, like, if I could recast Freddy as have like Marlon Brando in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, I'd be happy to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels just edges out the original because of that ending as well. But they both have balancing elements that are unique to their own films that I think keep them on almost equal ground for me.
Yeah.
So both very entertaining movies.
Oh, for sure.
I don't recommend watching them back to back like we did because it was a little boring the second time around.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, you can notice like monotonous. How very similar they
I'm
are.
I'm like, wow, if we ever do Psycho, I am like watching one at the beginning of the week and one at the end of the week instead of like the same night.
Wait, are we doing Psycho?
Not for a while. Okay. We might do it. I think it needs to be addressed.
You're right. It does have to happen.
Yeah.
I'm just going to imagine watching it like taking a shower and that's how I die.
Oh, well, we all know where we're going
to
leave.
We have to do that podcast in the shower, like all three of us. Just, I don't know if that's over the line, but I feel that's the only way
to experience. Can I wear my bathing suit?
No. Well, my shower's kind of, I don't think we all three of us can stand in
We'd
there.
We'd probably fit in mine. I have a very deep tub.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. So Invasion of the Remake is going to be invading the bathtub sometime in the future.
Near future.
You have to bring your own duckies.
And it might be maybe it's Hot Tub Time Machine.
Oh, there we go.
We're going to just do it.
Never
use that
even
one.
Seen that movie.
The first, I've never seen the second one, but the first one's actually surprisingly funny.
It's entertaining.
Yeah. And you know me with comedy, so if I'm saying I actually enjoyed it, it's actually probably worth watching. So.
I like the accuracy of the 80s, though. That's what brought me with Hot Tub Time Machine.
All right, guys. That's it for this episode. I'm Jason.
I'm Jeff, and I just want to say that I spent the last weekend at a convention, so we might have some interviews for you guys in an episode or two in the future. So
yeah, we should be doing those soon. I haven't listened to those yet, so I'm looking forward to seeing what he's got.
And I've been Trish, and I have no interviews. But again, if you want to really sponsor my poor, sick, dying Swedish, French, Scottish, English grandmother before she kicks
Italian.
It. Italian, Icelandic.
I can hear the cops coming for you. Right
now. No, I'm a good enough con woman that I can leave whenever I want to. But yeah, this has been a great one. I like it. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, one of my favorite films. So.
All right. Again, for our grandmothers and other grandparents, rate, review, and subscribe. That's it. We're out of here.
Peace.
Ruprecht?
Ruprecht.